Is this your first time at the Aspen Brain Lab?
Yes, it is.
Great. Are you excited?
Yes, I am.
Can you kind of explain in layman's terms what your research involves?
My research involves alternate methods for treating Alzheimer's disease because in recent years we've had a lot of clinical trial failures and things, and there's a lot of lack of consensus on what the research priorities should be, and there's an increased risk aversion towards Alzheimer's, going into Alzheimer's clinical trials. What we've discovered a protein that seems to be involved in modulating amyloid pathology. So what we've done is we've tested the relevance of this in Alzheimer's disease mouse models, and we found that when we remove this protein or delete it from the AD mouse model, we have an alleviation of the cognitive deficits that is one of the features of Alzheimer's disease patients, and also we have a lowering of the amyloid pathology in these mouse models, suggesting that this protein is a relevant therapeutic target for AD. And we've done these studies in a number of different AD mouse models, which gives it really therapeutic relevance for going and doing further studies with it. We also find that in AD patients, this protein appears to be, the expression of it appears to be elevated in a subset of patients. So what we want to do now is further develop this protein as an alternate target.
And how do you begin to do that?
The protein is orphan G-protein coupled receptor, which basically means that there's no identified endogenous ligand for this receptor to activate it. So what we'd like to do is to develop a compound that can selectively inhibit the activity of this protein. And in that way, hopefully, we will be able to reduce the amyloid pathology.
And this is big news. This is a great discovery. What has been the timeline when you guys discovered this and realizing what steps you have to take next?
We first discovered it in 2009, and since then we've been doing a lot of studies to, first of all, do in vitro validation and then in vivo validation in mouse models and then take human samples to be able to show the physiological relevance of the protein. And then in order to better therapeutically target it, we've also tried to understand the mechanism of action of this protein. So how do we get from changes in expression level of this protein to changes in amyloid pathology? And so basically, in about 7 years, this is what we've been able to do.
You've gotten very far in 7 years. Are you guys testing on, this is all being tested on humans, or have things really gotten to that point yet?
Right. So right now we're still in the preclinical phase of it. So basically my group does translational research. So what we would like to do is, now that we, in our mouse models, we've been able to show that it is a valid therapeutic target for AD, we'd like to now go further and develop a compound that we can show in animal molecules that is safe and effective in modulating amyloid pathology, and then hopefully at some point in time in the future, not too distant future, we can move into clinical trials in humans.
What kind of is a rough timeline of that, would you say?
Well, we'd hope it would be in, 5 years.
Your talk at the Aspen Brain Lab is titled A New Approach to Cure Alzheimer's. Is this what you're going to share with everybody on Saturday?
So this is part of what I will share. Specifically, I will talk about protein-coupled receptor that we discovered. But what we found is that the mechanism of action of this protein could be shared amongst other G-protein coupled receptors that have also been implicated in the pathogenesis of Alzheimer's disease. So perhaps we could use GPR3 as a model to also study or gain some insight into other proteins that are involved in amyloid pathology as well. So kind of opening up an alternate therapeutic avenue for the disease.
And could that affect other things besides Alzheimer's?
Yes, it's definitely possible, because there are some comorbidities and related diseases that have shared some similar pathologies with Alzheimer's.
For you personally, how did you get involved in Alzheimer's specifically?
So I started doing research on breast cancer, and there are these proteases. They're enzymes, they cut proteins in cells, and they're involved in metastases and things in breast cancer research. But I was interested in these proteins as they're kind of liberators in cells. So they kind of free things for good and for bad. And in Alzheimer's disease, there's actually three of these proteases that were involved. So that was the work that I did during my PhD. And so I decided to expand that knowledge and put it into another disease context, and to kind of broaden my research horizons. And so that's basically, I kind of got into it from being interested in these proteases, and I moved with that into Alzheimer's.
These proteins that you learned about and then you kind of took to research Alzheimer's, what, as far as what they're doing in the brain, can you explain a little of what those proteins are doing to make Alzheimer's happen?
Right. So these proteases, what they do in the brain is you have this protein called the amyloid precursor protein, and it's cleaved or it's cut by these proteases throughout your lifetime. Okay. So and they're normally processed and cleared from the brain. The problem is that with aging, things don't function as well as they used to. And so what happens is that perhaps the clearance of these proteins, once the cleavage occurs, the clearance of these proteins is no longer as good. And also the proteases are perhaps not as working as well with age. So that's one of the underlying causes of the disease, is that although these amyloid precursor protein is produced and it's cleaved normally, it's not cleaved and processed as well with age.
So this is kind of one avenue. It sounds like there are kind of a lot of researchers are going down a lot of different ways to try to fix, to cure Alzheimer's. So this is just kind of one, I guess, one angle, would you say?
Yeah. So basically, a lot of the clinical trials, they've been focused on these proteases directly inhibiting the function of the gamma secretase, which is the major protease involved in generating the amyloid beta peptides, which deposit and form amyloid plaques. And the problem with targeting this protease is that it not only cleaves or cuts APP, the amyloid precursor protein, but it also cuts a number of different proteins. Okay, so you can imagine if it inhibits the processing, this protease, and there are other proteins that it cuts that are important for normal brain function or body function, you can have a lot of adverse side effects. So a lot of the reasons for the clinical trial failures is that the drugs have not been specific for cleavage of the amyloid precursor protein alone, but it hits a lot of other targets. So why this is, a viable alternate therapeutic route is because what we found is that GPR3, the protein that we're interested in, specifically acts on the amyloid precursor protein and the gamma secretase. So in targeting it, you could actually get very specific inhibition of activity and prevention of cleavage, and you could also perhaps avoid a lot of the unwanted side effects that have come up in all of the recent clinical trial failure.
For someone like me or anyone, you know, the people that you'll be talking to this weekend, and I'm sure you've done a lot of these talks before, what are some of the misconceptions with Alzheimer's disease and finding a cure?
Well, I think people expect a bit of a magic bullet. Right? And it's such a complex disease with so many different comorbidities and co-factors that are involved that it's very difficult to treat it. And there also seems to be, because there's a lot of environmental, lifestyle factors, genetic factors that come into play, it's a very difficult disease to treat. And people want you to have a cure now, but I think it's going to take some time, and it's also a matter of that we need more funding for doing research for Alzheimer's disease because of the prevalence of it now. Yeah, those are a few of the misconceptions that I run into.
And for someone, say someone like me, I'm 26, you know, or someone in their 30s or 40s, what are things that we can do now? Obviously, I know genetics, you can't help those, but what are things that we could do now to try to avoid having Alzheimer's later in life?
There are certain genes that, well, if it runs in your family, then you should definitely get a genetic screen. As far as the majority of cases of Alzheimer's are sporadic in nature, in reducing the risk, physical exercise, keeping active, having a healthy diet, social activities, hanging out with friends and being social, intellectual stimulation, talking to people, attending lectures and seminars, and these kind of things are good to keep your mind functioning. Reducing stress through meditation or yoga, and sleep is also very important. I think getting at least 8 hours sleep a night is good because during your deep sleep, that's when you have this thing called memory consolidation. And so that kind of solidifies the memories in your brain. I think just living a really healthy lifestyle and sleeping well and trying to reduce stress are probably the best things that you can do.
A couple months ago, I did hear an interesting NPR story about how they are kind of, they've realized that sleeping is, getting into that deep sleep can also help clear out the plaque in your brain?
Yeah, there's like, so during sleep, apparently your brain has a way of removing gunk from it. So that's, there is some evidence for that as well, yes.
What about drinking and smoking? Are those things that are, could increase the likelihood of Alzheimer's? It's kind of...
I mean, I think there is some relation with smoking and Alzheimer's. I definitely don't think that smoking is good. But, of course, drinking a little red wine, is good.
Great. Well, thanks so much for talking with me, Amantha. This is really interesting.
Thank you, Barbara.